I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council work session for September 20th, 2022. We're a little late getting started. First item, we'll blame the train. First item is a monthly financial report for the period ending July 31st of 2022, and we'll turn it over to Heidi.
So sorry, this is a little fuzzy. You should have a clean copy in your packet. This is a summary, but statutory requirements kind of dictate that a presentation of the financial statements are given to the governing body every month. Historically, we've used this two-page summary report and sent it out by email. In talking with our external auditors, they requested that we send this report was fine, but that we also do it in a public meeting just so that we have documentation that it was distributed and that we also include the detail report out of the financial system. So the snapshot, I think, is a really good idea of what's going on, but now you have those detail reports that show what's happening in every department, each line item, which I think is great because often there's questions on, you know, youth city council budget or things like that, and you will have those reports. So going forward, I would like to, at the first city or work session of each month, just do a brief 5-minute presentation on anything interesting that's going on to fulfill that requirement and also answer any questions that you might have. So this financial reports for the period ended July 31st, 2022. We are 8% through our fiscal year, so not very far in. Revenues are at 8% collected and expenses are about 10% expended, and that's in the general fund. Overall, all other funds are tracking as we would be expecting this far into the year. An interesting thing to note is you're looking at those revenues, those tax revenues that were received in July, actually were posted back to June because they were for collections that happened in June. And so we won't see any tax revenues come through in July and August, and that's just standard accounting practice to book them back to the period that they were actually collected in. So kind of a boring financial report this early in the year, but that's what's going on. And there are some variances from year-to-date prior year. Mostly those are related to the timing of some payables. We had some large payables that came in that we pay quarterly that we paid in July, which when compared to last year, we paid in August. And then I've updated our transfers, interfund transfers, and I'm recording those monthly instead of quarterly. So it will look a little out of balance for the first probably quarter of this year as we align with that change in accounting practice. But that gives us the most accurate snapshot because a lot of the financial activity, that 8% revenues, why it's 8% collected and why that's so nice and tidy is because a lot of the activity that's happening right now is just transfers between the different funds. Were there any questions about the financial, either the snapshot report or the budget to revenue and expense comparison report? And I should.
Heidi, I just have a quick question. And
sure.
And this is almost embarrassing to ask it because we're past the budgeting period here. But I was, you know, just little truisms in your head that you have always been true. Property taxes and sales tax were all like half and half of the revenues. And here it's like sales tax is more than twice property taxes now. Is that just that the last couple of year?
It's probably been a change in the last 5 years with online collections coming on board and then the huge growth that we've seen during COVID. I don't know that we would anticipate that and maybe we'll level out in the next little bit, but that is not typical. Sales tax is always usually a larger percentage of a municipal revenue stream than property tax, but usually it's not 50-50.
So as we, and we've talked about this, I guess, but as we go forward, at some point, we need to address the property tax deficiency because we can't always count on the sales tax to bail us out.
That's true. I've got an interesting statistic to share in the next presentation on that. Okay. Not even a statistic, just a kind of a point of reference. So.
She wanted me to tear up for that, so.
All right, well, thank you.
We'll be making this same presentation every month to the council, just in case you missed the nuance there. We'll be doing this every month.
Thank you.
All right. So I was very excited when staff received the question, how is it property taxes aren't going up? There's been no truth in taxation, but tax bills are increasing. And there's many explanations for that. So I just kind of wanted to go into the overall process and give council some of the things that I've seen happen over the years with property taxes that kind of shifts that tax burden and creates that disparity sometimes, or that discrepancy. So certified tax rate. Let's back up a little bit. So the way property taxes work is it begins with valuations as of January 1st of each year. And the county assessor is required to assess every property and get that tax roll of assessments to the county auditor by May 22nd. So most of that goes through a computerized model. So it goes through a, what do they call it? Just a multi-factor assessing program. And then each property does get like an in-person appraisal or assessment every 5 years. But most of it goes through a model. That data then comes to the county auditor's office and is reviewed for variances from prior year, looking for things like properties that have lost a residential exemption that doesn't seem likely, just mainly really big variances in values year over year, either by tax area or individual property. So that valuation is then used in the certified tax rate calculation. And so the way the tax rate calculation works, and we've probably gone over this many, many times, is that you back into the tax rate based on what last year's tax revenues were. But it's also adjusted for things like new growth, increment value, delinquencies, and abatements, and equalizations. So this is the actual tax rate calculation. There's a lot going on here, and we'll come back to this, but I just kind of want to go the baseline of how that tax calculation works. And there's several YouTube videos that are out there that kind of explain this. I'm sure just the very, very basic theory of how that property tax calculation works has been explained. But this is just a few slides that kind of put it together in a nutshell. So if a taxing entity is authorized to collect $1,000 in property tax, they need to collect it from the eligible property. So in this case, you have four properties in this example, all of equal value. So $400,000, $100,000 each, $400,000 in value should generate $1,000 in property tax. So you divide the revenue by the property tax value to come up with the tax rate, which is the 0.00250. And the entity collects the $1,000. Say in the next year, the values double. And this is where you can see how that tax rate kind of works as a limiter there, a moderator there to bring the amount due down so that still, or that tax rate down so that still $1,000 is collected. So even though the total property values are now $800,000, the entity is still allowed to collect only $1,000, which means the tax rate is now 0.00125. Each property still pays $250 per year, and the $1,000 is collected. And realistically, what we see is something like this: all homes of different values, some with a residential exemption, some without. And so that tax burden is kind of shifted amongst all of the properties. But you can see now total values are $850,000 to collect the $1,000, tax rate of 0.00118, multiplied by that taxable value for each of those four properties comes up with the $1,000. Either way, in all three of these examples, the entity still gets the $1,000. So what about new growth? This is a big topic. New revenue comes in from new growth. This is going to be new properties coming on the tax rolls. It's also going to be improvements to existing properties. Typically, new growth is not enough to cover any type of inflationary factor. It's really meant to cover the cost of providing services to those new properties, new property owners. So here's a snapshot of the average home value in Davis County, or in the city of North Salt Lake. And this data did come from Davis County as of January 1 of this year. So the city has 5,669 primary residences, 55 secondary residences. So we only have 1% of our residential property values that are not getting that residential exemption. As a reminder, the residential exemption is where you only pay on the first 55%, or you only pay on 55% of the market value of the home. So that would mean the average market value, and this is true for this data that came from the county, average market value is $575,000 with a taxable value of $316,000. So there's two tax areas in the city. Tax area 44 with a combined rate of all taxing entities of 0.010017. Average tax bill for a home in that tax area would be $3,168. In tax area 45, that combined rate is 0.010142, with the bill being $3,207. And the difference is one of the, I think tax area 45 has a service for South Davis Water, so they collect tax in that area. And this is how that $3,168 breaks out. So you can see the percentage that each of the taxing entity gets and what makes up that total combined rate of the 0.010017. The entities highlighted in red have taken a tax increase and gone through the truth and taxation process in the last 2 years. So that could explain why residents, if they're thinking their tax bill has gone up, there's probably a pretty good chance that they're looking at their bottom line, and it probably did go up if they're just looking at their bottom line. You can see the city of North Salt Lake on that average home value of $575, taxable value of $316, is collecting $295 a year on that home. That equates to about $1.6 million in revenue. If you multiply that by the total amount, that total residential count, both primary and secondary, that's about almost equal. So I scanned through that budget to revenue document. That's about equal to the amount that the city pays for fire services. So all the other services that the residents are getting are coming from other revenue streams, would be one way to look at it. And that was kind of the point that I was going to make about what happens with the tax money, where it goes. Let's go back to that messy calculation again, because I wanted to talk a little bit more. So we've gone over this very, very simple idea: values go up, tax rates go down. But the other factors that impact this are going to be the values that are sitting in our project areas, and that's increment value. So I know it's hard to see on the big screen, but if you look over to the far left, or the box to the far left where it says real property values, it shows the value and then less increment value. That less increment value is the value that is sitting in our project areas. So what that is the project's base value, how much it's grown, that difference. So say you, across the street, say the current value is $500,000, but the base value was $20,000. That would be $480,000 in marginal value. And then increment value is how much participation all of the taxing entities are giving up, the taxes that they're giving up to participate through the life of that project. So if it was a 50-50% split, then we would have a reduction of $240,000 there in that property value. That would be kind of sucked out of our tax rate calculation. When those projects fall off, when they end, then they show up in that box in the middle bottom that says project area new growth. We would get then that year the new growth value for when those projects come onto the tax rolls. And then that would be considered next year as our overall baseline budget revenue that we're allowed to collect. Other things that impact the tax calculation are going to be over on the far right, that box that says certified tax rate calculation, and it talks about a collection rate. I think it's something like 95-96%. So we are also under the assumption that we are never going to collect 100% of our taxes. So there's a modifier that's added to the calculation. And all of these things are statutorily added to prevent the city from ever getting a windfall of property taxes. So assuming that we know, based on our five-year average, we are going to collect about 96%, our tax rate then is adjusted by a modifier there, as well as abatements, which is when people have parts of their, are eligible individuals or property owners have a part of their property taxes abated, either through an indigent abatement program. There's multiple programs. There's a blind program. There's a veterans program. So all of those go into that number as well. And then the last one is going to be Board of Equalization. So those are going to be appealed properties. So they go back and take a look at values of appealed properties and pull that out as well. And then you get at the very bottom in the green box, your certified tax rate value. So your taxable value goes through all of these steps before it's kind of distilled down. That's the value where they take last year's revenue, which is going to be in that bottom. I don't know. You can see in the very bottom to the left, it talks the 2020 year end adjusted revenues, the $2.7 million. That amount is then divided by that certified tax rate value to figure out how much the city, what the tax rate for the city is going to be for the year. So definitely a lot of things that impact that. One of the biggest things that I see that's going to be impacting entities in the next little bit is going to be that delinquency and collection rate is going to be declining, and I think we've already seen that a little bit. We had a collection rate of 96.5 in North Salt Lake in 2020, and we are down to 95 for 2022. So that five-year average, that's why they average it, which is great, but that's going to kind of impact our tax rate over the next little while. As a point of reference, not all cities in Davis County have the same collection rate. Layton, they're at 93.6%. So it does vary from city to city. So hopefully that was an in a nutshell explanation of this page. It's not really as complicated as it looks, but it does go through several factors before we do get that auditor certified tax rate. And that's the tax rate that we can then go out and pursue a truth in taxation and request more budgeted revenue.
So can I ask a question, Heidi, on
sure.
that? Sure. Back on that slide. So is the property tax revenue that we would attribute to new construction or new growth in the city, is that in the middle new growth box in the middle of the bottom?
Yes. So
spreadsheet, is that an actual amount that they're adding in?
It is. You can see the new growth calculation is the top right box, and that comes from the assessor's valuations. So what the way the actual formula works is they take into account the values, they pull out any values that are reappraisals, And then the balance is going to be what they consider new growth. And then, of course, it's adjusted for collections, and I think it's adjusted for something else. So that varies from year to year, what our new growth property value is. This year, I feel like we were really lucky. I think it was $96,000 we collected. That was pretty high. It can be around 15 to 20 normally. So, but again, when you see things like project areas ending and now the city is able to recognize those revenues and not have the adjustment for them, you'll see the new growth and revenues will increase. So the tax rate is set on the value in the green box, and then it's applied to the value, and then we collect that amount plus the amount that you take that tax rate and times it by that new growth calculated value, and then you get that additional $96,000, and then that's your total budgeted revenue, and then that will be how much we're able to collect next year, and the process will start again. So it does slowly increase a little bit as those new properties come on board, but it's unpredictable. So a little more complicated than this. I think you all kind of had a general idea of this part of the property tax calculation. But I wanted to, now that we've taken a look at where North Salt Lake City falls, or the city of North Salt Lake falls compared to the other taxing entities, I wanted to talk about the question we always get. If there wasn't a tax increase, why am I paying more? And it's because it's a value-added tax, an ad valorem tax. It's dependent on how your property increased in proportion to all the other properties in the tax area. So we still get to collect the $1,000 at the city regardless of what happens. So if you have things happen with other property values, that's going to kind of shift the tax burden. And these, I've given some examples of things that I've seen happen at the county level, because I was the one who would look at all those property tax variances before putting out the certified tax rates and looking at changes in valuations that were impacting tax rates. So you could have a change in the property characteristics where a property that was normally at market value got a greenbelt exemption, and all of a sudden you've lost all of that value to be able to collect on. You still get to collect the same amount of money. Example two, we saw back in the recession where homes on the bench increased in value during the housing boom quite a bit more than homes down in the valley. And the net effect of that, when everything kind of blew up, was that the homes that didn't increase as much had a more stable tax base. They didn't have the highs, right? So that they didn't lose their value as much. But that was a shift in the overall tax burden, because you could have these really high value homes now losing a ton of value. The value has to come from somewhere to make up that tax rate. And then the property values down kind of in the valley were more stable. They actually grew a little bit because they were more affordable during that time then. And so you just have these weird nuances with the economy that really impacts kind of where the tax burden is. And then you can have a shift in tax burden between residential and commercial. I haven't talked a lot about commercial yet. Obviously, there is no residential exemption for commercial properties, but you will see things decline due to lack of reinvestment. I know that there was a building in Centerville that ended up only having 50% occupancy, and so the valuation was dropped quite a bit by the county assessor. Well, that meant that everybody else had to pay in to make up that same amount of revenue. Even though their tax bill was decreased, the city was still able to collect the same amount of money, and so that shifted the burden to everybody else. Saw the same thing with the fire at a commercial property. So this is kind of what that looks like in real life. And I've taken each of these examples and tried to track it over a few years. So the top section is the taxable values, and then the bottom section is taxes due. And that very bottom line should be total taxes payable or something like that, not total taxable value. But you can see how the entity is going to collect $6,000 regardless of what the tax rate is. That's what they are authorized to collect. But, and this happened in Farmington with the Greenbelt over by Station Park, where you had a property roll into Greenbelt, lose $6 million in value. And you can see a home that was paid, you can just kind of see how that shifts what everybody else has to pay in taxes to make up that difference. So if you kind of follow the trend there with the different things that are happening, you can see the fire damage business. So it was worth $850,000, and then it was written down to just the land value of $40,000, and then it rebuilt at $250,000, so it was 20% rebuilt or something, and then it was built again. But in that time, the tax burden shifted to other taxpayers. And so that is one of the reasons why when someone says, yeah, I'm paying more, it's because somebody else is paying less for some reason or another. It's just hard to know it because it's proportionate to where they sit to all the other properties. And if it's not necessarily just in the city, it happens countywide. So if you think of the large levies, which are going to be your county and school district levies, your larger tax levies, if you were looking at the county as an entire tax area, one of the things that we saw was property values typically, historically, across the board in Davis County go up about 8% per year. In each city, it's been really stable. Well, when housing values started increasing, some of the more affordable areas started increasing at a higher rate. So Sunset and West Point and places up north, their values were going at closer to 12 to 15% while everybody else was staying at 8%. That and had the overall effect of shifting some of the tax burden there because of the way the values moved in proportion to the rest of the county. So I hope I didn't make that more confusing than it had to be. But I just wanted to explain some of the many factors that go into how property tax calculations work, how they get assessed, and how they could potentially continue increasing even if an entity has not gone out through a formal truth and taxation process. So,
can I ask a question?
Yeah. Great presentation. Picture's worth a thousand words. It's so helpful. I hope we get a copy of this so we can keep it and go back, and maybe we'll have a quiz at some point, see if we really got it. But it's great. But I do have a couple comments and questions. I'm surprised that at 9% is all we get out of all of that. I'm not surprised that the county is getting this much, and I'm not surprised the school, but that is, to me, very important data to know. The question that I've got is, you said the city has a budgeted revenue, and they said it that we have to get $1,000 per household?
Mm-hmm. Entity-wide, so for the whole tax area.
Okay. How do we set that? How do we come up with the $1,000 or the other slide where you had the $6,000 at the county? How is that set?
So when the city initially adopted whatever resolution that we were going to collect property taxes, they came up with the assessed value of all the properties at that time and then set how much we could collect based and use that year as the base year. I don't have the history. I don't know when that was. And I know there's, I think West Haven still does not collect a property tax. There are cities that don't collect property tax. And then it has just grown from there because of the new growth as new properties have been established.
So year after year, it would go through a process that you described.
The messy, messy process.
Yeah, unless the city held a truth and taxation hearing and said, we actually want to collect $500,000 more.
In our projected
revenue.
Then
it would reset with a new formula.
So then it's $1,100 per entity or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
in the absence of that, it just goes through this process.
Same process.
And statutorily, we're entitled to receive
right.
the same amount we received last year. As
and
an
it
example.
Requires yes. the city council to be proactive or initiate the process to raise the tax.
Correct.
Yes.
And we haven't done that in how many years?
Well, we've done it once, I think, in 25 years, 30 years maybe, when we need to hire two extra police officers.
So,
do you remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we did about? It in 2016 or 15, I think.
That sounds
was
right.
the last time.
And yeah. yet we are able to function as a city within the budgeted revenues that we have. Is that
yeah.
correct?
Well, and I think the sales tax growth that we've seen has attributed a lot to that ability.
So Heidi, then the county comes up with our new certified tax rate, and we adopt that every year.
In June.
I'm trying to think of the month.
We have to drop it by June 22nd, along with our budget.
Yeah. And
I'm out of my element on this, but the concept of property tax, right, is that it is, this is a question actually, is that it's a better hedge against recession than sales tax.
Property tax is extremely stable.
So that's part of our risk, right, is when we go into a recession, because we know it's inevitable at some point, then we'll be relying on that. And if we're caught in a place where we have let it erode every year due to inflation, then we're in real trouble. And even just the way we talk about it, right? We talk about raising taxes, but we don't, it's just trying to hold steady,
keep your head above water. So if we were to see a big drop off in sales tax and then suddenly weren't able to support the services that we had budgeted to provide, that would definitely be something that would need to be looked at. That's why I think we've been really conservative in our sales tax revenue growth projections. Even though they've been all over the board the last 18 months, we've tried to temper them a little bit into what we would historically expect during this time period and not overextend the city's finances, knowing that this is a temporary thing. And we have lots of sales tax history to look at. We have our data from the last recession, and we can see what happened during that time period. We can see what our revenue losses were during that time period. And it did take probably 2 to 3 years to get back to where we had been.
So our neighbor to the north, Natalie's favorite city, I think they're having, 73% tax increase or something? I mean, it was substantial. And they probably wish they'd had little ones for every year.
I also want to say that our neighbor to the north, in their brochure to explain why they needed to raise their taxes, they do actually include our bridge.
That they're not participating in at all?
Yeah. No, they are participating. That's why they're raising it.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
Okay. Never mind. That's awesome of them.
But what is it?
If I might make a comment, I think I agree with Heidi. This was a great question for the council to ask, and a great thing for us to all understand. I hope that from here we continue to build on the formation, if we can get there, the formation of maybe a property tax policy that you wish to adopt. Most communities, ours included, avoid truth in taxation and property tax increases until the need becomes so acute that you have a rate change like 75% or something that appears to be pretty drastic. Now, 75% is probably not much money for that community. It may be a few $100,000. But still, another way to look at property tax is to have the view that as costs escalate for the city, we might want to have a policy that says we're not going to get behind inflation. So we'll keep it the same, but we will increase property tax based on some sort of an index that we would agree with. And we just do it every year. We'd hold truth in taxation. And maybe you adjust your property tax by 3% or 5% or 7% annually. And that maintains, I guess, the purchasing power, if you say it that way, because I went to school a long, long time ago, and I know people don't say that anymore, but it maintains your property tax at a level where you're not losing it to inflation. But we might want to explore that as Heidi does more work on projections, which she's doing, and we take this time between now and when we begin our next budget process to really understand and make projections and see where that intersection is out in the future when the city staff may come to you and say, okay, now we'll need to do a property tax increase for these reasons. But it might be worth our time to really slug through what might be a good policy for property tax. Maybe we look at it every 5 years to avoid a 20-year increase that has to raise $1 million or something, and it's a real hard change for our residents. You know,
in a sense, it'd be like an analogy to a general plan
that
you update. You know, by analogy, it has to be updated. But a policy is a great idea because there's less emotion and more rational thinking. Mm-hmm. If you're planning ahead, and the citizenry knows that this city has planned for this and have been studying it for 2, 3, 4 years, whatever, and this is part of the policy.
I've thought about this a lot too. In fact, it'd be really nice if the legislature bailed us out and just said property tax is tied to CPI and it automatically goes up or down based on CPI. But the one argument that carries weight in my mind too is when the citizens say, like, when things are tough, we tighten our belts and do without, and the city just raises our taxes and doesn't do without. And so
should we ask them to not drive on the roads then anymore?
Yeah,
tighten
yeah.
the belt that way, and then we'll tighten.
Quit using water, you know, those things. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, let me just comment on that because I've been around a while. So we did kind of tighten our belt. What we did was stop putting as much money into the roads because, you know, you can kind of let that slide for a few years. And when we had the crash, I guess, back in the day, I mean, that's what we did. So we were able to tighten our belt, and you know, by not maintaining the roads as good as maybe we should. So now we're paying for that now because we have to go back and do more on the road. So it was a way to take the spike, I guess, out of the loss of revenue. But that's not necessarily a great practice, but that was what we did. But one thing I can say is that I like the first comment she made. I used to compare it to the roads, but when she said that the percentage that most residents are paying, you know, pretty well covers the fire district and that's it. I think we need to kind of put that out in a newsletter or make sure people understand that we're all being subsidized by somebody, because property tax really does not cover a lot of the expenses or a lot of the services that they're seeing.
And if you look at the school district,
right,
taking the lion's share plus 100% of the income tax,
yeah,
you know, then you're like, wow, they're the 800-pound gorilla. Okay, jump in there, Natalie.
They just changed that. So it was all of education, including college,
yeah,
and now they just changed it so that income tax also pays for social services. And I think Medicaid, one of those.
Because it had become so out of whack.
Because we'd stopped investing in our K-12 schools.
Well,
the
income tax had gone up just so much because we, let's face it, we're all prospering so much that our
maybe not the teachers.
Well, I appreciate this discussion. It's very helpful to us to be able to have these discussions with the council and share this with you. It's also a little bit risky for me to talk about property tax policy because it's easy for us to think, oh, there's something wrong, or maybe there's an emergency. But I just want to put your mind at ease that, you know, we are fiscally a very sound organization, and we'll stay that way. So I just didn't, if you were thinking that I was proposing annual property tax increases for some reason, that I was just talking, philosophically, that that's a choice you could make, not that we have to do that.
There's no fear and trembling.
Good.
But a question.
Besides mine.
Besides yours.
Yeah.
The question that I've got is, do we have a rainy day fund?
We do. We have our capital reserves.
That's what we call it, the capital reserves. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great question, too. And interestingly enough, the fire district, the fire board, adopted several financial policies, one of which was a target or a goal to maintain a rainy day fund. And they identified that by amount. And those are the kinds of policies that I think can be really helpful to a city or an organization, a government organization. Not that they become hard and fast rules, but they become good guidelines so that the governing boards don't allow things to get too far out of out of adjustment, so that you have to make drastic changes quickly, and you reduce the number of times you have emergency problems if you have good policies.
I would add, instead of just maybe a set amount to something like a percentage of property tax revenues, I'm sure that's probably what they did, so that the policy kind of stands the test of time, that we'll keep 25 or 30% of a year's worth of tax revenues in reserve or something like that is a good way to look at that amount, what that amount should be.
I just had one question. This chart that you have on the screen, is this Weber Basin water, is that those that get the Weber water, or this for
it's everybody? Everybody pays Weber Basin water.
Right, but
if you get it, then you get it. You will also get a bill.
Right, but if you go back to where you have the two different districts, you have the two different districts. One district pays a little bit more because they actually get the Weber water, and this is just for our culinary water.
They get both a they pay by tax rate, and then it's a user fee for those that are getting the secondary service. So they pay by a I think a quarterly bill or a quarterly statement, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, they do that as well, but it seemed like their tax rate on the Weber Basin water was a little higher.
I think they have just the one. Weber Basin has just the one tax rate, so far as I know, and it's charged to all Davis County residents.
There was two taxing entities, though. Different rates.
You were showing something earlier on one of your charts. The different.
Oh, it's South Davis water. Yes, some do pay South Davis water as well.
Sorry.
Yes, thank you for that clarification.
All right, that's where I was.
So
getting confused.
In that other tax area, those there's a subset of the city that is getting some service from South Davis water, so they do collect.
And I was confusing that with the Weber Basin because they get their water from Weber Basin. So.
But it's true that the majority of the residents are probably in tax area 44.
I believe so.
Yeah, that don't pay that.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Heidi. That was very helpful.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's, why don't we jump to the back of the agenda and approve our minutes and go through the, I was thinking of the action items. Should we do that? Is there any updates to the minutes?
Mayor, I'll make a motion. If there's no proposed amendments, that we adopt the minutes of September 6, 2022, City Council, North Salt Lake City Council meeting.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Those minutes pass. Anything for the action item?
So I'll just make a general comment about the action items. As we have several new assignments, which is great. But we will work to put some deadlines and some dates on when you can expect to either get feedback from us or a completion of the assignment, or some of these will result in presentations to the City Council, like the very first new assignment, which I believe was Councilmember Van Langevelde's assignment about looking at access to elementary schools. I would imagine that would be a report back in a work session or even on a regular session to the council. So we'll try and put some dates as we talk more about these assignments and we program them into what we do. We'll try to put some dates in our comments section, and this one was a little bit light on that, but we'll try and put that in there for the next meeting, so you'll see when we'll get back to you on some of these.
Okay, let's. Why don't we adjourn and maybe get started on time, almost, for our council meeting.
There was a train.
Darn train! What are we going to do about it? Why don't we build a bridge?